Hi, you're listening to Talking About Organizations, a podcast about management and organization studies brought to you with the support of the University of Sussex Business School. This is episode 50, where we are celebrating our third anniversary and taking the time to pause and reflect about the podcast, our participation, what we learned about podcasting, and what podcasting means to each of us, as well as what we plan for the future. At the outset of the episode, I want to thank our listeners, website visitors, and social media followers for accompanying us on this journey. It's been quite a ride, and many of you have been with us for a long part of the journey, and we greatly appreciate that, as well as the feedback and comments we get via the website. The other people I want to thank are Demetris for getting it started and providing an alternately firm and sometimes loose hand on the tiller we steer with, as well as the enormous work he does as audio engineer to make us sound as good as we do. I'm also very grateful for the opportunity to converse with my fellow podcasters because they really make talking about organizations fun. I'm Ralph, the esteemed and revered podcast season leader, as long as everyone agrees with me, and I'm coming to you from the wintry wilds of the eastern Rocky Mountain front in Montana, where it is currently -3 degrees centigrade.
And this is Tom calling from Carlisle, Pennsylvania in the United States.
This is Miranda calling from Coventry, University of Warwick.
This is Pedro coming from Lyon in France in a beautiful day in this beautiful city.
Hi, this is Ella coming to you from Amsterdam in the Netherlands.
My name is Dimitris, coming to you from Riga in Latvia.
Hi, this is Greta coming to you from Oxford.
So 50 episodes, how about that?
It's pretty amazing. It's also 7 people on the same episode, which we've never done before.
You crazy human beings.
Yeah.
Did someone have a speech?
No, so I think this is a good time for you to talk about, you know, the initiation of the podcast and how that got started. I mean, I certainly never saw this coming when I met you and Pedro at OLKC in Norway, and it was a surprise and a nice one to have you suggest that not only were you interested in my funny choice of hats, but you thought I might be able to participate in the podcast.
I miss your hats. They used to be so colorful.
Yeah, me too. I'm not wearing one right now because it's too cold here inside.
But yeah, wow, it's been, we can trace our origins to 2014 when we kind of all met. And I don't know, I don't want to necessarily rehash the whole origin stories. We did that a few times, but I just want to thank Pedro and Miranda and you, Ralph, for, contributing a huge chunk of your time for something as weird and unexplored and unproven as trying to start a podcast with me at final year or close to final year of your PhD. So that was a bit of a leap in the dark, but I think it worked out really well. We have continued podcasting for 50 episodes, which is quite incredible, or technically 150 since each of our episodes is 3 parts or so. We have an incredible audience of about 11,400, last I checked, who listen to us every week. That blows my mind that this many people voluntarily choose to sit down and listen to us talk about these readings. We've seen an emergence in the interest in the classics, which I think at least part of that we can take credit for. Just so much has happened, and I think that through us trying to do this, something new and something that we've been interested in, something that we wanted to do, even though, let's face it, a bunch of people told us not to bother. when we were setting out, I think we did manage to impact a significant change and to make a difference in our field, to make it more open, to make it more accessible. We had an incredible number of amazing guests on, with many of whom it was, well, with all of whom it was a pleasure to talk to, but also our listeners got to participate in those conversations that probably wouldn't have been possible otherwise. Like, I'm still a bit shocked that we got some of the people that we got on the podcast, and it's amazing. So thank you to the original cast. Thank you to Ella, Greta, and Tom for joining later, and to our former podcasters, Yusuf and Joe Bradley, and of course to Jared Damon, who handles a lot of our backroom stuff and social media stuff. So it's just, this is very much a team effort, and it can't be otherwise.
Yeah.
It's a conversation, and it's just, thank you all.
I had to smile when you were talking about the fact that we started the podcast over the warnings of dire wastage of time and pointlessness that some people gave. I never heard those comments. Just probably you were getting more of them than I was. And every time I mention the podcast at a conference, I'm actually pleasantly surprised by the number of people that say, "Oh yeah, I've heard of that," or that they think it's a really good idea, and share our thoughts about why it's important and useful and helpful to share the scholarship on organizational science and management.
Well, in a way, I think what is interesting is, from what I perceive, although scholarship is still done in a particular way, but I see more and more of interest and people starting podcasts themselves. So it seems that we are also having a little impact on how scholars communicate their ideas. And it's great to see that.
Yeah, you're right. And I think it's also a good opportunity to then plug our latest initiative, the Talking About Organizations podcast network, that is now about to launch its first spin-off shows, and that we're very excited for. But importantly, we, having done this for the past 3 years and having been very satisfied with the results, we are now in a position to help our colleagues, our peers, to launch something similar should they wish to themselves. I definitely use podcasts and similar techniques in my teaching, and students love it. And it's, let's face it, it's an amazing knowledge dissemination tool. So let's see if we can enact a larger change and podcastization of our field in some way.
Is that a real word, podcastization?
It is now. It's on the internet, so it's true.
All right, it's a good one. All right, we'll have to get that added. We'll have a glossary for the website. So I think Demetrius's comments are spot on, and it's a good segue into the next thing we want to discuss, which is why we participate. And I'll start, because I think some discussion about this will help our listeners see what our motivations are and why they might be interested in starting a podcast or having a podcast that matches their interest and finding people who are like-minded. In my particular case, I enjoy studying and discussing the readings that we select a great deal. We have a very democratic process for choosing the readings, and I'm always interested in what the others find interesting, which I suppose is a recursive process at the level of interest. I often start reading with many critical and possibly dismissive thoughts about the text, and I know that sometimes Miranda and Pedro join me in this, but the deeper reflection required to analyze it for discussion invariably leads me to develop a better appreciation for what the author or authors were trying to do and how they chose to go about it. And I also find the live and unrehearsed, they are completely unrehearsed, conversations with the other podcasters enormously helpful for generating new insights about the work and the topic in general in my research.
And the reason why I participate is in addition to the fun that we have in doing in holding these discussions, I know that I find in my area, which is in executive education, how easy it is to just sort of lose one's touch when it comes to what's going on in the broader range of academia. And it's a good opportunity to touch and learn about subjects that weren't really part of my, central to my doctoral studies, but wind up informing a lot of things that I do in practice that I can bring either into the classroom or into consultation. So it's good for breadth, for keeping one's eyes open to other perspectives that we wouldn't have, like if I had stayed strictly within my particular field, that I wouldn't have had a chance to explore.
Well, as for me, I think my initial reason was more out of curiosity, as in when Demetrius approached me, I was like, oh, this sounds cool. I'd really, really like to try this out. I think what the core concept that has always, I've always admired about this podcast is this idea of going back to the original readings. So a lot of research builds on theories that are quite dated, but actually we kind of forget to go back to the original readings and see what the authors actually said. And I think going back has always got its benefits. And you can actually see what truly the author said. And as I've progressed throughout the episodes, I've appreciated the opportunity to exchange discussions over readings beating time zones and geographic distance. And this has been very, very enriching for me and a very valuable experience. And I cannot but thank you all for this.
It's always hard to pin down just one reason why. But I think for me, what is important is that I see the work in the podcast almost as a service to the community, to the overall group of scholars interested in organization management research. And I think we have a lot of sometimes concern in trying to put forward our own ideas. And of course, we want our research and personal interests to be out there. But I think it's also important to pause and push somehow, not just a particular idea, but a specific perspective in the great scheme of political economy of different ways of explaining phenomena. I think it's important to highlight that organizational management research can add a lot. You know, some disciplines, as we know, have more clout and prestige than others. And I sometimes feel that our field is almost half known, you know, in a way there is traditional social sciences. There is a lot of ideas that come from management practice itself and consultants. But I think that our position as kind of applied researchers doesn't always get heard. So I think it's important to have channels like the podcast to put forward what we stand for, what it can add to the broader conversations in society about a number of different topics. And in a way, I think in a more personal note, I think it is a great opportunity to have a moment to pause, learn together, and think together. You know, the kind of work that we do tends to be very isolated. If you compare from people in like the hard science that work in labs and do a lot of things together, such as even doing literature reviews, we pretty much work alone. So I like the idea of the podcast of almost having this periodic appointment for coming together and just checking what we're thinking about text, usually the classic ones, and how, you know, we tackle the problem and what things spark us. So it, you know, help us to better understand and better think about different problems.
And you're right, it's almost like an alternative way of getting access to these things, right? So it's not a journal, it's not a book, it's not a blog, it's not mm-hmm. something you have to read, or it's not something you have to be in the same room with the people that you're listening to. It's something that mm-hmm. you can do in complement to or as an alternative to the existing ways of communication and this thinking together that we have available in our institutions. This is available for everyone. Everyone can listen to it whenever.
And I like the way you guys put it about thinking together and Pedro's metaphor of the lab. That's a really interesting way to talk about it, because it's not just a solitary pursuit, and you can try out ideas on others. And in fact, sometimes when we're having the conversations, I have something I think is maybe a little out of the ordinary or a little strange, and it's a nice environment where you're gonna, you know, not everybody's always thrilled about my ideas, but I get good feedback, and it's interesting to hear it reflected from others. So that's something I really appreciate about the opportunity.
Absolutely. And I like that there's this social accountability built into the process. So sometimes the books that we propose to read, for example, I know that I really want to read them. They're great books. They're on my bookshelf, but I just haven't found the time. And then we have this deadline where we're going to be discussing them. And not only that, all of our great listeners will also be listening into our thoughts. And so there's this accountability to read that book, to develop some thoughts on it, and then to also be surprised by what others thought of it. And like many of you, I also find that our work can be quite solitary, and reading in particular is a very independent activity. But then we get this chance to discuss and share that experience, and then to share that also with a broader audience. That's what I love about being on the podcast.
Being the youngest member of the podcast, let me tell how I got to know about it. And I recall it was, I think it was during my fieldwork last year in the San Francisco Bay Area that I learned about this great initiative talking about organizations. And as some of you may know, doing fieldwork at times can be quite lonely. You often have to explain why you're actually interested in how people work and how firms organize themselves, and explain that it's actually a field of scholarly research. Many people don't know about that, and I think the podcast is an important initiative to make a change in that and to bring work and organizations back in the attention of the broader public, and especially as it's changing so rapidly at the moment. Yeah, I think it's a wonderful initiative to get the conversation going and outside of the university context. So how I got involved is actually I think it was December last year after the Talking About Organizations symposium on the sharing economy, and I think it was early January that Dimitris and Pedro invited me to become a part-time host. I don't remember what I wrote exactly, but I haven't regretted ever since saying yes. I always feel energized after our discussions, being happy to be working in such an exciting field of research. And I actually feel I have made some friends participating in the podcast. So thanks, guys.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, you absolutely have made friends, Greta. And we occasionally are able to get together. It's not often, but occasionally we can. And it's always a pleasure to do so. So I think of you all as friends.
Yeah, just a quick note. I think that's what's interesting in the podcast, that we are a very funny organization ourselves. You know, I think that's kind of spectacular that we managed to pull together that, being so distributed, doing most things via emails and all kind of electronic channels.
Well,
and
just think about how we introduce every single episode, where we say, you know, we give our names and then we say where we're calling in from. And I'd be interested to plot out on a map all of the different countries we have resided in over the course of time, because some of us have been quite migratory.
that would be good, actually. Yeah. Yes. And then sometimes some of us have to sneak into offices on campus when we have a brief opportunity to record. And so it's very eclectic way of getting together.
Didn't we have somebody record from their car once, or some other some other odd location?
More than once, actually. We could hear the traffic sounds.
But yeah, I mean, it just goes to show that there is no reason to keep stuff like that contained within the university walls or any other walls, you know. The technology is available enough to, you know, to be able to do this if there's enough motivation and will to put something like that together.
And I think it shows another thing. I think it also shows the power somehow of scholarship and of fields, because in a way, even though we're coming from different perspectives, I think we share a common thread in the interest of organizational processes and management. And, you know, we are all social scientists in one way or another. And I think having read a certain more or less similar canon and all that, I think enables us to just jump into conversations. Many people are very surprised to the fact that we just record and release more or less as the conversation is. A lot of people think that we prepare or almost like read out of a text. So I think, again, it shows the power of our field and how many there are so many ideas and very established perspectives on how to tease out issues. That's the reason why we manage to have this always rich, engaging, and more very fluid conversation as well.
Yeah, and imagine if we had to prepare scripts for this.
Oh yeah, that'd be a lot of work. It's enough to do the reading and a few notes and reading.
Well, what's even funny is that we do publicly say that we break our episodes up into three parts, and part one is supposed to be this, part two, and we do occasionally follow it, but not always. We actually talk.
Yeah, we struggle. We occasionally need Pedro to get us back on track in the various episodes. No,
don't say that.
I'm very grateful, Pedro, when you do that, because we could go off in all sorts of directions, and we have in prior podcasts. So this is a sort of a new thing for us. So I think some of the things that we're talking about now, I lend themselves to a little more discussion about the identity of the podcast, because that's a bit of what we're talking about. So Tom, do you want to take it from there?
Yeah, sure. And this is an opportunity for us, all seven of us, to kind of answer a question that I posed back in episode 47 when we were doing Albert and Wetton's article on organizational identity. And I asked, it was just three of us at that time, which we bandied about what is the identity of the podcast? And so I kind of like to go ahead and throw that question out to all seven of us. What do we think is the identity of the podcast? What's our central character? What makes us distinct from other podcasts? And what's our connection with, you know, what is our historical stream? I think I'll put it that way. And Greta gets a pass because I really put her on the spot the last time I asked this question.
No need to do so, Tom.
But she did wonderfully.
I was recollecting what I said during the last podcast. And I think I said something about like the traditional ways we communicate in our field and talk about management and organizations. And on the one hand, this is mostly in like teachings and conference talks. And on the other hand, it's mostly through writing journal articles and books. And building upon like what makes us as a podcast distinct from other entities in our field, I said we are the active debate, the active conversation about issues in management and organizations. I think I said something along those lines, if I recall it well.
So I always thought that we are a reading group. That's usually how I describe people. We are kind of a seminar style kind of podcast. And I think that is very great because sometimes when I listen to different podcasts, the fact that we are dialoguing and, you know, unpacking and sometimes even provoking each other a bit helps to distill a certain concept or idea from all different vantage points. So I think there's something about that. I also like thinking more about our organization, that we are somehow a collective enterprise. You know, Demetrius always said that from the beginning that he didn't want to be so much Steve Jobs about the podcast. And I think we have been able to include all kind of different people, and there has been all kind of changes, and it's not only a collectively done, but I think it has also a collective identity, you know, which again foregrounds the discipline, the field, the perspective more than just us. I very much see us as, you know, being in service of the podcast. And I think most of our conversations and even disagreements that we had along all this time are just different positions on what we think is best for this thing that we're trying to do.
Well, I think that we do have a very democratic ideal at the core of the podcast, and being interested in technology, I will mention the technology aspect of it as well. I think we're really harnessing the best of technology, and that we are distributed all across the world. We haven't met in person, some of us, and yet we are brought together via technology to discuss these classic texts. So it's a really nice joining of the old and the new. And then we even have managed to bring this quite specific topic around organization studies and management texts onto the platform Spotify, which I'm so thrilled about, that, you know, we're on there with all of the popular music of the day. And I think that speaks to that ideal, which was part of what the internet promised, which was to bring information to the public. And that's free. You can access it and you can engage with these quite niche ideas in a really broad way just because you're interested in it. And so that's why I think that democratic ideal is at the core.
Oh my God, we are the bastion of democracy in the internet. I love that.
It's exciting. I'm glad Ella pointed
exactly.
that out.
And also, well, I subscribe to all the previous points which are neatly packaged, but I'd also like to point out this dual nature of looking at the past in terms of classic texts, but also with a view towards the future and to the current situation. I think we're very good at tying these threads together. And it's something that I've always appreciated mm-hmm. about our discussions.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't think I can speak to our identity that much, but I think our central characteristic, at least for me, and that was one of the things that I was most passionate about when conceiving this, is that we offer a live, emergent conversation. And I think there's a deficit of quality conversations in the contemporary social life, mm-hmm. but we have that. It's unscripted, as Ralph said. It flows. Sometimes it doesn't flow exactly as we'd like it to, or in the directions that, in retrospect, would have been beneficial to cover. But it is what it is, and it's happening in the moment. And I think that's very attractive to a whole lot of people, because this has been said few times now, but what we do is rather isolated, or can be isolated anyway. And I think having an emergent conversation that you can go to at any point in time and don't necessarily have to participate in actively is really appealing to many people. I know it is certainly appealing to me.
So I will just unpack a bit what Dimitri said, which is a great example of how things happen in the podcast. You know, he just said something that made me think about this enterprise in a different way, I think the fact that this live element is very important. And if you think about it, scholarship is a lot about controlling what you say. And, you know, because we get our ideas across usually via text, there is a lot of rewriting, rethinking, get the specific ideas right. And there's almost, you know, kind of an required obsession to be very precise. And I think that we forget that there are other ways to think, there are other ways to communicate, there are other ways to put across an idea. And being able to have the space to do this live, I think, can sharpen our skills differently, which can lead maybe to also unblocking and taking a different perspective that would be maybe harder to do if we're just stuck with the writing and the written word, so to speak.
Well, who was that wacky German philosopher who argued that nothing should ever be written down because it always loses the ability to answer or contextualize? That basically, once you write something down, it loses the ability to be discursive. And that is a huge deficit of anything that's written down. And also the stakes are lower, right? So ours is a podcast. It's not a peer-reviewed anything. I mean, it's peer-reviewed live, but that's about it.
Right. I mean, in a sense, it's peer-reviewed by our listeners, and the numbers are going up. I just wanted to say one thing about Pedro's mentioning of the fact you had to be very precise and very cautious, and the podcast gives you a bit more freedom. I think that's one of the great features of the podcast, because there'll be times when I'll read something and I'll think, I think I want to make this comment about it. I want to try this out. And I don't have to be really particular with my language. I can just put it out there, and I'm guaranteed to get feedback from Pedro, but also Demetrius as well. I mean, everybody will give me feedback, and then it will kind of bounce around in some respects. I mean, in some ways, it's like a ball that goes back and forth, and you can see what other people do with it, what they see as interesting, and other things that they will add to it. And so I also really appreciate that the social nature of the playfulness that we try to take with ideas, because that's one of the things I really value about the podcast, and why, like Greta, at the end, I'm very energized. I'm always a little bit anxious at the beginning, maybe a little performance anxiety, but you're such a welcoming group of scholars, and we have these interesting conversations. I always come away learning and feeling better about our community and the things that we're exploring when we have these conversations.
Hey, did you have this thing when we were starting out, like in the first couple of episodes, when you'd be freaking out about saying something stupid?
Yes.
On the podcast?
Absolutely. And,
yeah.
And I was very nervous.
You still have it.
Not so much. So I don't worry about saying stupid things, because you guys will actually help me out and identify it one way or the other, or Pedro or Miranda or Ella or, you know, agree to anybody will say, oh, that's here's an interesting idea. And it matches something I had. So I find that, oh, that's kind of validating. But the thing I worry about a bit is that my observations would be kind of trite and banal. And it's like, well, who will care about that kind of stuff? And then we get into the nature of the conversation, and I don't worry about that anymore. And it's such a welcoming area or place. That's a virtual place, as Ella pointed out, for having these ideas. It really does feel like the vibe that we're trying to create. This is what I always tell people, besides the introductions that you gave, which I thought were good, the others gave. I try to tell them it's as if you're sitting in a pub or a lounge, and we're all sitting down. We may be drinking an alcoholic beverage, we may not be, and we have done that from time to time with each other. And we're having a conversation, and if you're not on the podcast, it's as if you're standing near us and could sit down and listen, or just stand nearby and listen to us talk. That's the vibe or the sense we're trying to create, and I think we do a pretty good job of that. So, I have a little bit of that anxiety at the front end of the podcast, but it goes away during the course of the podcast.
I think that's a really significant thing, though, because that has certainly been an anxiety of mine. Mm-hmm. During my PhD, especially when participating in conferences and presenting papers and going to seminars and so on and so forth, and with people who are way ahead of me in this career. But it has certainly gone away since we started the podcast, or soon thereafter. And I think it's an important lesson that there is a certain freedom of expression that is important in scholarship. And it's very liberating to speak to your colleagues and peers without these worries of what will others think of me if I say something stupid, because we all say silly things time to time, and it's okay. You know, it's part of knowledge seeking. It's part of figuring things out. It's part of doing this on the fly philosophy that we do.
It's just not philosophy. I would disagree with that.
Yes, it is.
Well, and I think sometimes there's a quote that both Tom and I have heard, and I think we've done it a few times, where sometimes you can't know what you think until you hear yourself say it, right? Or you have to try something out. And I'll do that many times where the thought maybe will not be complete and I'm not quite getting it right, writing it down, but I'll just get it out there and then we'll have a conversation about it. And I think that's an important part of the knowledge generation process.
I think this is strongly related to the nature of the conversation and the improvised discussion, and also a bit of this balance between all the parts that participate in the dialogue. So maybe I start a thought and someone else is able to refine it, to complete it, or if it's a thought that maybe is not so, let's say, right, someone can kind of push it into another direction, which is a bit more effective.
And that even with all the things that we may have gotten wrong, or things we misrepresented, or things we said that we might not have said now, we still got to get referenced in a 3- and 4-star paper, which is quite incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, that about made me fall over when you shared that with us.
It's great also that the conversations here help really inform me in my work. And one example, and I usually look at this as kind of like my favorite episode, was episode 27, where we had Andrew Pettigrew in the context and action and the transformation of the firm. The presentation of Pettigrew's triangle was something that I didn't know about before I joined the podcast, but I have found tremendous utility in using that to inform a lot of the work that I'm doing in educating back at the Army War College. And there's been other episodes that have helped me like think through some challenges that I've had trying to help it with the education program. That happened to be the first. And ever since then, I found numerous opportunities where I can apply what I learned from you all in these conversations.
Yeah, Tom, I've had a similar experience with my research. I actually was listening to the episode on The Foreman, which is Roethlisberger's classic from 1945. And this article about The Foreman, the master and victim of double talk, I wasn't familiar with that text until I listened to the podcast episode on it. And at the time, I was doing a piece of research looking at community managers of enterprise social networks. So they're charged with making this enterprise social network happen in their company. And they were all getting together and talking on an online platform about the challenge of that role. And as I was listening to the podcast, I started to think, hang on, that's very apt for the challenges that this crowd that I was studying are experiencing. So we ended up looking further into that and developing an idea. But it's that sort of podcast where you dip into these ideas and you never know when you're going to find something that really resonates and that helps with an issue that you're dealing with at the time.
So I don't have a similar epiphanic moment, but there were some episodes, I think, that really helped me think about my own work and think about how different ideas connect and just rethink, I think, general state of the field that were very great. In particular, I think one of my favorites is episode 25, which is about competitive groups as cognitive communities, in which is a GMS classic paper about the Scottish knitwear manufacturers that we had Sarah Kaplan as a guest, which, by the way, is one of my favorite academics ever. And because she knows the field that paper is inserted in so well and the impact it had, she even wrote an essay, a review for GMS on what has been the impact of the paper. It was great to have someone that was able to conceptualize so well the reason behind the emergence of that paper, how it changed the conversation, what new conversations were sparked, you know. And there were some moments that she almost, not really stopped us, but she almost like made us remember that some of those things have to be appreciated in context. So some of the issues we were pointing out at the paper were, I mean, they didn't apply so well because what the author was trying to do was different. I mean, the state of the field was so different that what the author was trying to do is to push in a certain direction. Of course, things then change. So I think that was a great lesson on trying to read things in context somehow, trying to not only see a specific statement or idea or concept, but trying to tease out how it connects and what is the conversation that piece of writing has been is inserted in.
So you're scoring the favorite episode based on eye-opening quality of it.
Yes, yeah, in a way, because I think it more than a specific idea just reminded me on the importance of doing this kind of attentive contextual reading of ideas.
Is there an episode that you just had pure enjoyment in participating in?
All of them.
Oh yeah, but I'd say it had to be our 12 Angry Men episode. That was a blast, and so was the Federalist Paper one. That was fun from beginning to end. Most of them are. But
yeah, I would say I'd vote for Federalist Paper.
That was different. I wouldn't say my favorite, but that's maybe because we had to argue against the position of preference there.
Well, and that's what made it fun and interesting, right? I mean, I think in some ways we had to keep saying, this is not my official position, this is not what I really believe, but I have this position I have to argue, which I thought made it fun.
Yeah, we'd make terrible politicians.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and so I have a little difficulty, I think, with like the others, picking a single episode that I enjoyed, because I, like Pedro, I've enjoyed them all. I particularly enjoyed episode 24 with William Starbuck as our special guest. And on that episode, we discussed his article, Learning by Knowledge, Intensive Firms. And like Pedro, I always find it interesting how these connect with other aspects of the field and the scholarship that's going on. And I get tidbits out of all of them. And the key insight I drew from that paper and our discussion about it, which was quite unexpected for me, was that while knowledge itself is important, learning and relationships, and that is the social knowledge that's associated, are possibly just as important in organizations. I also had an opportunity to converse with Bill in email about current problems and issues in scholarship that I got a great deal out of, and it's off topic, so I'm not going to go into details. And then also, almost all of our guests, and I would have to say all of them, and Bill included, were very self-effacing. They were easy to talk to, Bill especially. And he was a real joy to talk to because the insight he gave about how and why he wrote the paper the way he did, that I thought was really interesting, where we talked about how the field is kind of solitary and you're writing these papers and you're getting all these peer reviews and you don't know these people. And here the author is giving you insight into what happened when he was getting ready to write the paper, why he chose to write the paper the way he did. I thought that was very interesting.
So if we're going on the eye-opening quality of episodes, I think mine will have to be number one when we started off with the principles of scientific management, simply because of how much it blew my mind with how wrong I've been about that particular school of thought for...
Wasn't that something?
Yeah, that was amazing. I read it, yeah. And I was like, wow, all these things that I've been taught throughout bachelor's, master's, and even a little bit in the beginning of PhD about scientific management, they may hold true for scientific management broadly, but they certainly did not hold true for this work that is used to represent scientific management. And that was mind-blowing, and it's never been the same since then. But it's not my favorite episode. I think I'm going to score on the pure enjoyment of conversation. I think that for me would have to be episode 3 on Maslow and episode 13 on Banana Time. It was just so fun.
Oh, Banana Time, of course. That was great.
The text is so fun.
Text is fun, and we got to talk about different views of time and games and all kinds of things. And the Maslow, where we discovered that there's no pyramid mentioned anywhere in that paper.
Yes!
We did that a few years ahead of the now celebrated article by our good friends from the New History of Management. So it's been great fun. And I mean, I like vast majority of episodes that I participated on, and many, many, many the ones that I did not.
For me, in terms of enjoyment, I think I'm always going to remember the episode 10 on 12 Angry Men, because it was something very different from everything we set up before and the episodes afterwards. And I think it was a nice way just to experiment with something different and trying to relate theories to
in that case, a film that is often used in management courses to talk about decision making. I also really did enjoy Banana Time. And I think generally speaking, I've always had fond memories of the episodes with our guests, because especially when we have the fortune of contacting authors of the works that we're actually reading, because you get a bit of a more insight on who's behind the piece of work.
Who's your favorite guest, Miranda?
I'm trying to think. I think I may go back to the episode with Mintzberg.
Yes, yes.
I think that was quite memorable. What do you think?
That was a blast.
I also loved it.
It was fun. I remember when we were actually at the OLKC in St. Andrews, I think at Paul Duguay's keynote speech, when I fired off a very speculative email to Henry Mintzberg about, hey, we're going to do an episode on your book. Do you want to join? And he replied to my great astonishment. I remember I was sitting next to Davide Nicolini and I just turned my laptop over to him and pointed at the email excitedly. And the email just said, what do you want me to do? Henry.
that's a good, at least that wasn't a heck no, which we've gotten from other people.
We never got a heck no, but yeah.
Okay, so I interpreted that way, but you're right, it wasn't quite that way.
No, I'm sure it was, but phrased more eloquently.
Yes, they were very polite.
So let me tell a bit about what I like about the podcast and why I started to listen. So during my training, during my master's and during my PhD, I never really had a course on organization and management theory or important studies in this field. And I, being a scholar of organizations and having done extensive fieldwork, I always felt like I missed some background or some context. Also when reading like the latest journals, like how to position current debates in like a broader framework or a broader context. So when I became aware of the podcast initiative, I kind of promised, I made a promise to myself to listen to all the episodes. I told Dimitris about it and he was like, really? Are you really doing this? So I've not completed this task yet. And so my favorite episode is from the ones I listened to so far. Similar to Dimitris, I loved the episode Banana Time, and particularly when you guys are discussing the games that the workers are developing to kill like periods of boredom. I thought it was amazing. And one episode that's close at my heart, and it connects to why I do the research that I do and why I teach what I teach, is the one on episode 18 on algorithmic management in the gig economy. And it's not only the empirical topic of the gig economy, but it's also applying classical studies and classical theories in our field to understand current phenomena. And I think as scholars, we do our work, sometimes we get overly focused on making new contributions or new theoretical contributions, and we're so focused on the newness that we sometimes not always stand still and look at what's already there. And how can we use these frameworks, these valuable frameworks we already have, to understand what is happening and to have a more informed conversation about the changes that we see around us, especially as like the technological change in workplace we're seeing now, and kind of did a media debate about that, about its implications when you think, for instance, about automation, algorithmic management. I thought that was a wonderful episode, and I hope we will have more of those in the future.
Yes, we will. I think there is something that I'm, again, really proud of the podcast, exactly being able to, as we said, look back in the past and see what exists and kind of pause a bit of this obsession and what is new. And in particular, I think we have been able to read a lot of interesting texts about industrialization. And we have seen how many of them can inform current conversations about the gig economy and a whole host of different technologies that are entering the contemporary organizations. So I think we are particularly, you know, I'm particularly proud that we have been doing that to showcase how much debate from, for example, the Tavistock group. And we had an episode on the classic paper by Thiersen Bamforth on the arrival of industrialization in the coal mines. And we learned so much from that episode and others on how looking at technological change of the past that seems on the surface completely different can actually enlighten a lot of the dynamics we are actually seeing today.
Absolutely, Pedro. I really believe that this grounding in the classics and looking back to history can also help us to articulate what is new and what is novel about what we're seeing today. But if we don't have that grounding, mm-hmm. then it's sort of this tendency to say that everything's mm-hmm. new, but that's rarely the case. So I think it really assists to bring some nuance into the conversation, this practice of looking back.
Mm. So yeah, it's been definitely fun these past 50 episodes and just over 3 years, and hopefully, you know, we'll continue doing this for longer. But I'm curious to find out what for each of you and also for me, because, you know, you don't know what you think until you say it. Where do we think this is going? What's the, not necessarily the purpose, but what's the vector and the long-term horizon for something like this? Do you think we'll continue doing this for another 50 episodes, for another 100 episodes, until we hand it over to our PhD students forever? You know, what do you think is the future of the podcast?
At least more 50.
Yeah, 50 would be good.
Yeah, I see at least 50, because Pedro and others and Greta and Ella come up with really interesting things to read. And I was reflecting on that when I think it was Greta was talking about how she felt like she had missed a part. And I, you know, given how broad this field of scholarship is, it's hard not to have that feeling, because you can't study everything as a background. And I come to many of these papers with an open sense of exploration, and I'm learning new things. And many times I find out Pedro's already familiar with this stuff, so it's great to learn from him and Demetrius as well, and get some of the philosophical inputs. So I don't have any expectation that the number is going to end at a particular number. But I think in the one area where I think we can be of service, or we can extend this further, is being having this platform and this network to help other people do these kinds of podcasts. You know, for people who want to start out and do something either similar or different, or explore the field in a different way, they would have the ability to say, well, how do you do this? Or how do we get moving down this direction? Or what did you learn? Because we struggled quite a bit with that on the front end. And I think everybody who starts a podcast does that, tries to decide, well, what are we really about? And what's our essential nature and the character of our organization? And I think we didn't really think of it as an organization to start with. In fact, I think Demetrius, we only really started talking about tailorizing our podcast and how we do it after we've been in it for about a year and a half. And we thought, okay, well, maybe this could help us a little bit, be a little bit more organized, and thus positions like season leader and audio engineer and mm-hmm. the website designer and those kinds of things.
Yeah, we had to, because it was getting too much. Like, it's not difficult to start a podcast, but as I keep saying, that it's difficult to do it well. And when you have this, and it is a lot of work. It's a huge number of workload, not just in terms of reading and preparing, but then processing the episodes and writing the descriptions and keeping the website up. And obviously we do it in our spare time, and that pool of spare time is just progressively getting smaller and smaller as we progress in our careers in academia and elsewhere. So it was more of a desperate attempt to keep the thing going by introducing a bit of structure. And I don't know if maybe we would have been still doing this, but I'm skeptical if we didn't invite part-time hosts to join the podcast, if we would be able to proceed in the way that we proceeded. So having Joe, Tom, and Ella join us initially, and then Tom to take up the permanent spot, and Greta come on board. That was, I think it's important to keep refreshing the available opinions, points of view, new energies, new initiatives. And so I think that is something to continue doing as we move forward.
Yes, this is actually a call for our listeners. We are always, in a way, looking for people that are interested and want to get engaged, because, as we mentioned before, this is very much a collective doing, you know, so we are open from people that want to collaborate with us and get involved. So do reach out.
Yeah, and there's different ways. So there's the actual podcasting, but if that's not your cup of tea, you know, Jared is doing an incredible amount of work on running the social media.
Yeah, he's amazing. Yeah, and he volunteered for that. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And running the newsletter. And before that, we had Yusuf, who kind of started some of these things. And so there's always things to do. There's always things we can contribute to our communities. But obviously, we only have so much energy and resources to do that between the eight of us.
Well, and we often get suggestions from listeners, oh, you should do this or you should do that. And my response usually is, okay, if you're going to come on board and help us, yes. But what, you know, what you currently get now is what we have the resources to do. So we don't, it's not like we're looking for new things to do necessarily, but we're always interested, as Pedro said, in new ideas.
And that's part of what I would like to see going forward too, is I'd really like to get to know our audience better. So I love when people contribute online on social media and comment and say what they're getting out of episodes, or even come up to us when we're at conferences and explain to us what they're listening to and what they think of it. I really enjoy those interactions. So for everyone out there, if you you know, have the inclination, do reach out and get in touch. We really get a lot out of hearing from you.
Another thing I'm looking forward is that, in a way, as we mentioned, the podcast started in a conference and we have continued our engagement with recording live conversations in conference, recording presentations from conference. And I think I would like to continue to do that more, you know, to have offline presence, or at least offline combined with some online content presence as well. And last year, we took the podcast to the Academy of Management. We organized a workshop, a PDW, and it was very successful. We had wonderful scholars talking about ideas from authors in social theory and organizational theory, and we were going to continue that engagement. And we want this to be almost like a standing moment in one of the biggest gatherings of our field, in which we can all pause and look back, not only look what is new and hot, but also how the different ideas from the past can help us rethink and think about what we are interested in researching. So I'm really looking forward to continuing that and continuing our, you know, engagement with live events.
Yeah, and we had a history of this somewhat, that we started off with recording specials at the OLKC conferences for a couple of years. And then we had our first symposium in December 2017 in collaboration with the Society for the Advancement of Management Studies, where we, it was our first proper event that we did. It's just, we keep moving forward. In next year, there's another PDW at the Academy, right? And we're taking center stage at the OLKC conference in 2019, that is at the University of Sussex in Brighton. Podcast is a major
exciting
partner of that. Yeah, but aside from just having the opportunity to pop into physical presence, as opposed to being voices on record, I think the significant part with us getting involved in these events is that we are able to bring in the lessons that we learned from doing this podcast. So we're having it much more conversational than traditionally that would be expected. It's much more focused on classics, and there's a lot more reference to cross disciplines in these events and how we approach them. I think we're just taking what's good of our initiative here, and we're trying to bring it to more traditional, more orthodox envelope, and thus maybe make it a little bit more like here, like more like we like, more like we value. And so we want to continue to do more of that as we go forward. And again, if you're up for helping out in some way, you know, get in touch, because there's always things that we can do to go forward with the things that we think are valuable and to develop the field of management and organization studies in the ways that we think it should be developed. More equal, more diverse, more open, more conversational. There's a bit of a chip on my shoulder, actually, that I'd like to get rid of. Occasionally, in at least this year, and maybe at the tail end of last year, there's an odd article coming out by some of senior academics who go on about, hey, is there anything else to research in management and organization studies? Have we hit a dead end? Is it is the field in a rut? Are we spinning wheels and stuff like that? And I take major issue with that kind of thinking. I think that's disingenuous, and I think it's not fair, and it's setting bad example to young scholars. There's no such thing as hitting a dead end in a field of inquiry. It's just about thinking of different paradigms, of different approaches. We're heading into exciting directions with the digitization of the workplace and the emergence and availability of technologies, and there's so much to do. And I think having more conversations, talking to more different people, is extremely important now.
Yes. And I would also add having productive conversations. So you, as you know, I'm super excited about bureaucracy, which is something that people sometimes are puzzled. But I usually say, you know, people are very quick to just complain about bureaucracy and this and that. And I think we as organizational scholars, more than anyone, should be pay more attention of how it is still important. So not only look at how things are changing, but also how things that are so present that we almost sometimes forget, or just talk in a more informal, or just in a more let's complain about it instead of just let's try to understand it. You know, there is a lot of value to go and try to understand that. And as you said, Dimitris, put that center of inquiry there.
Yeah, we shouldn't be making memes out of core concepts like bureaucracy, like scientific management, like human resources. You know, this stuff. And it's not just us, obviously, who's doing that. Mm-hmm. There's some colleagues who are working in these directions in more or less traditional ways. But it's an important part of our intellectual integrity, I think, to keep revisiting and keep rethinking these things and not just brush them under the carpet and say, hey, bureaucracy is just this thing that Merton wrote about. It's all red tape.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, scientific management is dehumanizing and de-skilling the work.
Yes.
Well, there's certainly no shortage of problems in the real world to solve that we can definitely inform. And as long as there are problems in the real world to solve, I think there's plenty of room for more thought and inquiry into organizations.
Yeah, so I like Dimitris's comment. There's no dead ends in a field of inquiry. I mean, there's just different questions to ask or different ways to look at it. And I also like his comment, but we shouldn't be making memes out of these terms. That was excellent, because you do get people kind of tend to roll their eyes when you talk about bureaucracy because there's this sort of surface level understanding or perception people have. And I'm like Pedro, I think it's endlessly interesting about what it does and how it kind of slices up organizational life and the things it empowers and certain things it doesn't empower. But I also don't like the idea of it being a meme.
That being said, I have a real concern that we're going to run out of things to have episodes about.
Oh, don't worry.
Rather than later.
I'm sure.
Pedro's got lots of ideas.
Yes.
It's possible, though. I don't want to dismiss that.
Okay.
But I don't see any signs of it yet.
One other thing I'd like to do more of in the future is to use the resources that we've developed, so all these great episodes, and actually use them in my teaching more. And now that I am teaching more courses, there's always these opportunities to, instead of assigning a reading, perhaps assigning either additionally or as a primary text, a podcast to listen to. And I think that's nice for the students too, to recognize that these papers don't exist in a vacuum, and some of these texts are being discussed in the wider world and even on social media and introducing them to that kind of scholarly conversation via the podcast, I think, is a real opportunity, and that's something I'd like to explore more.
And we actually did that at Warwick Business School just after I left, and Pedro, I think you still participated in some of that, of using episodes instead of seminar readings. And I use in my teaching at Sussex, what I do is I use methods of podcasts. So essentially, I get my students on the International Human Resources module to create their own podcasts and then listen to others in their group, and then they have to write a report on what they found interesting. Just kind of blending the...
That's a great idea.
...this and what is expected of a university curriculum. But there's so much more that we can do, totally.
Yes, and we do know that we have at least, I think, 17 universities that are using the podcast for didactic purpose, which is great. And of course, we'd like to have it even, you know, a broader number.
It's actually 19. More. I checked just before the episode.
Oh, okay.
A couple new ones.
Yeah, the number is constantly changing. Yes. So I want to thank everybody for coming together today. We promised to make this a concise podcast, and so it shall be. And this is, not only have we reached a milestone here for 50 episodes and 3 years, but also having 7 people for participating in the conversation, which I think was very enlightening. And I hope our listeners get the sense that we're not done yet. We have some new ideas to explore, new ways to go. And I really think that there are a couple of really interesting comments. I mean, everybody made interesting comments. I certainly liked Greta's talking about the fact that we look at the classics and these tools means that you should rethink that whether you need to make a brand new contribution or we should think that these tools and analysis methods and paradigms are useful for further analysis. And I think we talked about that with the gig economy and some things that are old or new. And I think this our final emphasis on using this is a platform for helping other podcasters, but also assisting with university courses and the blending that Demetrius and Ella were talking about is very promising for the future. And we encourage our listeners to tell us how that's working and any lessons they have. And we love to hear from our listeners and we're looking for feedback.
I think one message to go out with is that we did this for these 50 episodes and we're going to continue doing it. But we would now like to extend the invitation to the broader community to get involved with us so that we can start implementing these things that are great about the podcast more broadly. So we welcome your engagement.
Right, because there's things that we like to do because the chemistry we have together and what we're interested in. But if somebody feels like there's something lacking or would like to explore other areas, instead of encouraging us or asking us to do it, why don't you do it? Why don't you find some interested
join us and do it.
Conspirators, yes. And join us. Yes, because we're trying to make that easier so that we're not the only voice in this field, that there we can have more voices because we certainly think that's important. That's a great point, Demetrius.
Yeah, and we'll support you. Yes. We'll help you as much as we can.
Yes. Yes.
And that's all for episode 50. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the discussion and found it valuable. If so, please tell your friends, colleagues, and students who may be interested in these topics about the podcast. You can also give us feedback, which we'd love to receive, via Twitter, Facebook, or our website, which is where you can also subscribe to our newsletter. Please join us next time here on Talking About Organizations.